You're listening to Game Play with Matthew Kaws on TSN 1050. Embrace the odds.
I want winners.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the second hour of Game Play. I'm your host, Matthew Kaws. As always, this show brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite teams on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. We are joined now by our TSN Leafs reporter, Mark Masters. And the Leafs, as I said, they got lucky. You had a Raptor game on Sunday. You had a hell of a Super Bowl on Sunday, which can sometimes cloud and fuzzy up the memory of Leaf fans about what happened on Saturday night. But to join us now to clear all the fog and to bring his perspective, it is Mark Masters. Mark, thank you so much for joining the show today.
Good to be on with you. There was not much fog at the outdoor practice yesterday, and lots of fans very happy with the team despite the loss Saturday. It just shows you, right, that the love and passion of Leafs Nation, it's there.
Of course.
Regardless.
Of course. By the way, tomorrow is Valentine's Day. Don't think my opening thought isn't going to be about the dysfunctional nature of being a sports fan. We'll save that for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And you know what? To be fair and balanced, let's start with the good. The beautiful, sunny, blue day yesterday in the city of Toronto. How was it? How was Nathan Phillips Square? Paint the picture a little bit more before I ask the question, what the hell was that on Saturday night? Tell us about how sunny Sunday was.
It was awesome. It was a beautiful day. I don't know if there was a cloud in the sky. So many fans packing the stands there. And, everyone was ear-to-ear smiles. There was obviously a huge change from the tone post-game Saturday. So, you know, John Tavares said it's the perfect way to kind of start turning the page on what was a bit of a debacle on Saturday night against the last-place team in the league. So it was a great experience. They kind of did a three-on-three tournament because, you know, usually after a back-to-back, they would not practice. They would not be on the ice. That's kind of a sports science thing. It's usually almost always a day off. So this was a rare thing, but they're coming off the bye break. So it was good timing if you're ever going to do it. And, Team Ontario gets it done over Team Europe in the final of the 3-on-3 tournament. There was also a Team North America, which was, of course, all the players outside of Ontario on the continent. So it was fun. They signed autographs. They drove. They took the TTC. Mitch Marner said the best part of that was just seeing the faces of people being shocked to see a professional hockey team in full equipment getting on the subway. So it was a fun day and certainly a big change from the mood a few hours earlier down at Scotiabank.
Yeah, oh no, I saw on your Twitter account, you can follow him on Twitter, at Mark H. Masters. Man, what does the H stand for? I've never asked this before.
Harrison.
Harrison. That's an awesome middle name.
Mm-hmm,
as someone who grew up with Han Solo and Indiana Jones, Harrison. Damn, that's good. All right. You can follow him on Twitter, and just there was a lot of great shots you sent. It looked really cool. All right. So let's get on to the more pressing issue. One game is only one game, and we will not make a mountain out of a molehill. Colorado and Tampa and all the top teams lose to bottom feeders. It happens in all sports. But I still have to wonder about what is it seems like still that level of emotional immaturity, not because of just what happened on Saturday, though what happened on Saturday was pretty embarrassing, but Toronto has 3 wins and 7 losses against the bottom teams in the NHL this season. And I couldn't help but after that game, I just made a little note and just wrote emotional immaturity. Just your thoughts, Mark, not just on last night, but on this season and last season as well, the winning percentage Toronto has against teams that don't do much winning.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a big reason why the division race isn't a race, at least at the top. And I'm not sure what to make of it, because, yeah, as you mentioned, teams, it's human nature sometimes to play down to the opposition.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's 82 games and you can't be locked in, but this Leafs team in particular seems to really struggle with that, despite the fact they keep saying they're focused on it. And there wasn't many answers on Saturday night, like the players did not have any answers, and neither did Sheldon Keefe when he said, "How do you explain it?" He said, "I can't. I cannot do the work for them." It was a pretty damning comment from the coach. I think the bigger, you know, and I've been thinking about this, and I don't have an answer either, but is there a connection with the way that they aren't able to remain locked in that situation and some of the some of the kind of brain farts they've had at the most important times of the year, that they're susceptible to this? And is there some sort of connection, even though they seem to show up against the top teams in the regular season and play very well against them, that maybe there is a defect here that comes out in these games but also comes out at the most important times of the year when they're just unable to maintain that focus? You know, game six in Tampa, and they've got the lead in the third period, but then they, you know, the penalties come, and then they can't finish it off. So you do wonder, and I don't have the answer there, but I do think it is worth something that is worth noting and is a question mark and is a concern when they put value in it and they talk about it and they want to change it and they can't. To me, that raises a red flag. And the good thing for them is the next four games are also coming up against teams that are currently outside of playoff picture. They got Chicago on a Chicago playing on the second half of a back-to-back Wednesday, Montreal, who they've already lost to twice on Saturday, and then in Chicago on Sunday. So it'll be very interesting to see how they respond to that this week.
All right. I'm going to ask you a question about that in a second. But and by the way, the fact that you don't have an answer, the fact the coach doesn't, the players don't, I don't expect one. So I'll just ask this. How many times do you think over the last couple of years, because you do a great job covering the team and, you know, we can read your work at tsn.ca and you do a really good summation of what's happened and what's coming up. How many times do you think over the last couple of years you wrote about or asked about or talked about this same issue that we just discussed for the last 3 minutes?
Yeah, a lot. And that's why it's like, I don't even know where to take the story. They just can't do it consistently against some of these. Because, you come into this year and you kind of want them to be like Boston is. And Boston lost in Arizona. It was a bit of a controversial ending. There was a nice thing that didn't get called. Anyway, they lost that game in Arizona. But other than that, they've pretty much steamrolled every team they should steamroll. They just don't really lose that to those teams, and you're kind of hoping that something would flip with Toronto, and that, because what you really want is in the playoffs for them to just not be denied, is for them to go into this series and for their top guys to take over to a degree and for this team to just be too good to lose, and when it matters most just be like, we're not losing this time. And they haven't been able to put their foot down at times against these opponents. So and you just, like, it's not even a, like, what do you can't, what do you suppose, like, you're not getting answers from the players on it, because there is no answer, it feels like, unless you're a therapist in there kind of talking to them every day. Maybe that's who you talk to, but there is no answer. But it has been a recurring theme for sure, certainly over the last couple of seasons.
What did you make of Wall, his first start, where, you know, he gives up four goals, but he also has a 900 save percentage. Your thoughts on Joseph Wall, the good and the bad from Saturday?
Yeah, what a tricky night for him. Like, four shots in the first period, and he finishes the night facing 40. And, you know, it's your first ever home start as a member of the Maple Leafs in the NHL. So there's a lot going on there. And I thought he was solid. Like, I'm certainly not going to throw him under the bus for the loss. And I was really impressed with him after the game. He wasn't down on himself, and he said he felt a lot more comfortable than last season when he made his NHL debut and played four games. And he did look comfortable, I thought, more so than last year. Just in, you know, you would have liked him to cover the puck leading into the third goal there that eventually got pumped in by Corrali, but, you know, he just couldn't quite get his glove on it. But I thought in general he acquitted himself nicely, and they got the other back-to-back coming up this weekend, and I'm not sure what Matt Murray's status is, but I wouldn't hesitate to go back to him Sunday at the United Center and give him another shot here, because he's 24 and the time is kind of now. He's only a year younger than Samsonov, so he's a third-round pick. Let's see what he can do if Murray's not ready, and even if he is, you might want to give him a little more time to get up and running, considering his track record. And I've been impressed with Wall, and certainly how could you not be impressed with what he's done in the American Hockey League this season, where he's pretty much perfect.
Going to two other little small things. Did Justin Hall not realize the Maple Leafs have signed Connor Timmins to a 2-year deal? And did nights like Saturday, was that a reminder, watching Pierre Engvall on the ice, this is why the Leafs are looking for another top six forward?
Ooh, a couple of the whipping boys, eh? Justin Hall. Maybe he saw his phone at the intermission and saw that the Chikrin trade was coming here.
Oh, the Chikrin trade. We've been having this for... I said this earlier, so this is a recycled joke. Did you realize at the moment that Chikrin was drafted by Arizona, 10 minutes later, Pierre LeBrun reported that Chikrin was on the trade board?
It's felt that way, hasn't it?
It has. It has. Oh, you've been... Yeah.
Yeah, I guess Chikrin's a lefty. Yeah, maybe the Timmins. I don't know. It was not a great night for Justin Hall, clearly. And that's why people are concerned about the defense. Because right now, Justin Hall's in the, you know, he's playing hard minutes. He's a pretty important player in a playoff series right now, as this defense is currently constituted. And this is why, and then you look at Pierre Engvall, and, you know, he gets the belt from John Tavares. The captain passes him the belt in a jubilant dressing room on Friday night after he has a career-high 6 shots on net. You know, Coach Sheldon Keefe says his third line was his best line that game, and then, you know, they kind of muck it up in their own end, and they just, when you're the third line, you can't do that. When you got to be the solid, you might not have to score, but you can't be giving up goals. You can't be giving away the puck in the slot, and Engvall and Anderson didn't play another shift after, in the second period after that happened, the Boone Jenner goal there on Saturday night. So, Yes, frustration with Hall, frustration with Engvall, and this is why people think that the Leafs need to add not just one, but two players, one up front and one on defense. And Kyle Dubas was watching that, and I'm sure he's having similar thoughts.
How scared should bettors be? Because I like to do my cowardly bet of the day, where I take, what is the one like where you got to bet $20 to win $3? And I specialize in that because I am a coward. But how nervous should Leaf fans be with this Chicago-Montreal-Chicago? Because you're going to have to bet like $328 to win $100. Like, there's going to be some minus 325s, minus 350s out there. How nervous should I be betting the Leafs against teams that are more interested in Connor Bedard than in the playoffs?
Well, I would not be nervous about Wednesday. They usually bounce back pretty nicely, right?
That's like, true. They lead the league in bounce backs, yes.
Exactly. And they come back and they say, okay, we're going to be okay. Saturday, I would certainly be on high alert because Montreal's already beaten them twice, and you know Montreal's going to get up for that. And Montreal actually has been playing all right here. They just beat the Islanders and the Oilers coming out of the break. They got the Blackhawks Tuesday. Then they got to go to Raleigh, so maybe that will be a loss. But they're probably feeling all right. And obviously the divisional rivalry Saturday, I don't know. And then back-to-back Sunday, I believe the Blackhawks are off Saturday, so they'll be a rest opponent. So the weekend certainly has me on high alert for a potential letdown, but I think they'll be all right Wednesday, I would say.
Should I get pre-angry on the Josh Anderson goal he scores on the second period on Saturday against the Maple Leafs?
No, you should be happy if he only scores one. Right? You just should factor that into your night going in. He's like, I know Josh Anderson is going to score.
Yes.
And there you go.
You know what? Let's leave it there. That is a good answer by you, my friend. Mark, always appreciate. Fantastic job covering the team. All the best, and we will chat soon.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Take care. That is Mark Masters. And covers the Toronto Maple Leafs. And we know it's happening, right? Like, we know it's happening. Josh Anderson is going to get a goal, or at the very least multiple points. And again, I'm already looking ahead till Saturday. The Leafs' next game is against Chicago on Wednesday. All right, we got to take a break. On the other side, I thought there was some interesting analysis about the best player in the Super Bowl, and it wasn't Patrick Mahomes. And we will get into that next right here on Gameplay right after traffic. Let's start here real quick. The Kansas City Chiefs do not merit dynasty with a capital D. Now they are, it's true. They are not a dynasty with a capital D. Now, do they have a minor D? Yes, they've been every year. Patrick Mahomes makes at least the AFC Championship game. He's now been to 3 Super Bowls. He's won 2, defeated the San Francisco 49ers a couple years ago, and now defeated Philadelphia 38-35 in a thrilling Super Bowl. He's been incredible. Andy Reid is the only coach to have more than 100 wins with 2 different franchises. He helped turn around Philly, helped turn around Kansas City, did a lot of winning with a lot of different quarterbacks since his Philadelphia days, and is not a top 5 of all time NFL coach, but at least is on his way there. I try not to do prisoner of the moment. Whatever I saw last is the greatest thing. You want to make an argument for Montana over Tom Brady? I'm here for that conversation. But Kansas City is certainly on that path of dynasty with a capital D, with Patrick Mahomes could eventually become a top five quarterback, maybe higher. Andy Reid could be a top five coach, maybe higher. Why does Eric Bieniemy not have a job yet? Why has Eric Bieniemy not been hired? Like, you look at the game plan yesterday against that Eagles defense. And part of that goes on Reid, because, you know, I mean, I think part of that hurts Eric Bieniemy is that a lot of the shine about the offense, we think of Andy Reid first, because he comes from a quarterback offensive background. But Eric Bieniemy's been there, helped get Alex Smith coached up, and helped develop Patrick Mahomes, the Sky Moore, Kadarius Toney touchdowns wide open, no sacks, no holding penalties by the KC offensive line. I mean, I've been saying it for years on this show. Like, it amazes me that Eric Bieniemy hasn't been head coach yet. I think the boring answer is, well, he is involved in a lot of playoff games and a lot of Super Bowls. Maybe he doesn't do as much interviewing as other coaches on teams that have been eliminated earlier or didn't make the playoffs at all. Then there'll be talk, obviously, of how much of this is a racial component when you look at how few black head coaches are out there. I don't know. Like, I can't tell you. I don't know what's in the hearts of these owners. I would assume that even the owners with prejudice within them, either conscious or unconscious, still would prefer winning over anything else that they might be having negatively emotionally. But I got to tell you, I am shocked that Eric Bieniemy is not yet a head coach, and you know, I expect it to happen at any moment.
And it's also crazy, Matt, if I might add.
Yeah.
For it feels like the last 5 years, it might be only the last 3 years, but it feels like the last 5 years, he's always mentioned in coaching vacancies for interviews.
Is he
single year?
Yeah. Is he a bad interview? Like what my question is.
How bad of an interview do you have to be if you have the track record that he has?
But yeah, and like, I don't want to do the thing where I am dismissive of the race issue, because that would be insensitive and be ignorant on my part.
Absolutely.
But what I try to do is take a step back from the emotion, and maybe this is naive, I just assume, even whatever owner has the most hate in his heart for people that don't look like him, that they're still more competitive than they are anything else.
Right.
They're more greedy than anything else. Once you start winning in the playoffs, that's free money.
Yeah.
So I just, what do these owners or these GMs, what do they know that we don't?
Okay, I'm gonna play the opposite side.
Yeah, go.
What if Bieniemy, who has had interviews before for multiple head coaching jobs, we can agree that that's true.
Yeah.
What if he's the one going in and saying, listen, guys, unless you absolutely wow me with this, I'm pretty happy coaching with Andy Reid and this Chiefs team. What if that's the case? And there's no way for us to know that, obviously, Matty, but there's always that potential, right? That he's like, hey, listen, unless you absolutely blow me away with an offer, I'm good.
If I'm Eric Bieniemy, this is what I do. I wait till LA, fires Brendan Staley.
San Diego.
The greatest city in the history of the world. I want to go there. Just wait till you fire Staley, then I'll take over and I'll allow it so that Justin Herbert isn't throwing the ball 3 yards past the line of scrimmage on every play.
50 times.
50. Oh, God. If I had a vote, I think I would have voted Jalen Hurts for MVP.
I'm on the same page.
And let's hear.
And that doesn't take anything away from Mahomes.
No, but. God, no. Like, if the in terms of just pure heroism, coming back from like hopping around with that injury is incredible. But let's also remember the running game helped Mahomes. Nothing wrong with that. Patrick Mahomes was incredible. He was incredible that game. I don't care that he had under 200 yards. He was incredible in that game. But the two touchdown passes, part of that was Mahomes doing a great job reading on the run pass option and reading what the defense was doing, but also credit to Bieniemy and credit to Andy Reid for putting up schemes where both Kadarius Toney and Sky Moore wide open. And let's hear from Get Up, the morning show on ESPN, and them talking about just how much Jalen Hurts has improved as a quarterback, as a passer, and that he was the best player on the field last night.
That's the best game I've ever seen Jalen Hurts play. And Greeny, to your point, some of those throws to Dallas Goedert, honestly, I was up in the booth with Lewis and Levy calling, and we were like, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, he made three or four throws you shouldn't even attempt.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, because they're so tight and so dangerous, and they were perfectly placed. And I remember the throw he made against the Giants game this season, and I came on TV and I was like, I've never seen a quarterback improve when it comes to ball placement the way Jalen Hurts has. And that was accurate. That was a factual statement. His performance last night.
That third was 14.
Oh my gosh.
Corner pass to Goddard was an interception. If you are 1 inch off in any direction,
exactly.
It's an interception, and he throws it and completes it. And to have the confidence to take a shot like that means he really has faith in his arm. And as athletic as he was and how important his rushing attempts are to this offense's decision making, we don't want to overlook the fact that also he's turned into a pinpoint accurate quarterback too. He's risen up to that level.
Four touchdowns and lost.
He was spectacular last night. I opened the show by saying I thought he was the best player on the field. Bart gave me a funny look. I understand Mahomes. I'm not suggesting he should have been the MVP in defeat. Don't get me wrong. But I mean, if you ask me who was the best player on the field last night, I thought it was Hurts.
I don't mind giving it. I don't mind giving it to Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, I got a question for you, Matty, because this is one of my biggest pet peeves when it comes to awards in sport.
Yeah.
What does the MVP award actually stand for?
I know the V. Valuable.
That's what I mean. Not the word. I know what the word MVP stands for, but like, what does the award in your mind actually mean?
See, that's tough. Because
exactly. Why? Why is it tough though?
Because the problem is because the word value and valuable is open to so much more interpretation than, outstanding, like they have in the CFL. The most outstanding player yesterday was Jalen Hurts. Maybe because you always have to give it to a player on the winning team.
Why?
Well, we've seen it.
Same with the Conn Smythe. Why do you have to give it to the winning team?
I know. I think that, Chad Henne helped direct a long drive when KC beat Jacksonville, and Gardner Minshew had a good year. I just think that, like, Patrick Mahomes had the best running back in the Super Bowl.
Yes.
Patrick Mahomes had at least a defense that got two sacks and returned a fumble for a touchdown. Patrick Mahomes had two of his touchdown passes, the guy was wide open. One of those touchdowns was after a long return by Kadarius Toney that set up the Sky Moore touchdown. On the other side, Jalen Hurts had 70 yards rushing. All the other running backs had like 45, 46 yards and averaged under 3 yards a carry. We saw so many times where, and they mentioned there, the perfect passes to Dallas Goedert on 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8. I'm fine with Mahomes getting the MVP. I'm not going to yell and scream about it. I'm just saying, if they had given it to Hurts, I would also not be here raising hell about that selection.
No. So. I just always struggle with who is the most valuable player in the game.
Yeah, I struggle with it as well. Maybe it has to be someone on the winning team because of the letter. It's because it's valuable.
But
I know.
But if without Jalen Hurts, is that game even close?
No.
Does it come down to a last second field goal?
Probably not.
No.
We will continue this. Sean King, former Super Bowl champ, will join us on the other side. We'll do that after traffic, which is brought to you by JanPro, Canada's leader in commercial cleaning and disinfection services. Trust the professionals at JanPro. Visit them today at janpro.ca. We've said it so many times, and especially over the football season, if you are a fan of sports, if you're a fan of sports betting, if you're a fan of somewhere in between, you've got to go to VSIN. That's VSIN.com. The first and only 24-hour, 7-day-a-week sports betting broadcast station. And joining us now, the co-host of VSIN Live Primetime from 6 to 9 Eastern, one of our favorites. And soon we will transition from him talking football to him being Puckstradamus. It is former NFL quarterback, 2003 Super Bowl champ of the Buccaneers. It's Sean King. Sean, thanks for joining the show.
Hey, what's up? And I'm coming in with a bang. I hate to rain on the parade there in Toronto, but don't trust Samson Knauf or Murray. Maple Leafs going nowhere this year come playoffs.
No, you are a showman. You know, you're an entertainer. You can't start this interview with that about the Maple Leafs. Leaf fans are insecure right now after that horrible loss to Columbus on Saturday.
I'm just telling you, you can't trust either one of your goaltenders, and that's a big problem come playoff time.
Yeah, well, certainly Matt Murray, he might not even be healthy by that time. We'll see. Sam Samsonov's been, you know what? No, we're not going to argue about Leafs goalies right now because I need to start here with you, Sean. We'll do this in a couple weeks. Let's go back to you and your Super Bowl win over the Raiders. What was that moment like? Let's start with this. What was the locker room like soon after when you guys got there after you guys beat Oakland?
I mean, it was surreal. It was a whirlwind for us because we didn't have the extra week in between. So we went right from the conference championship game on a Sunday to having to be in San Diego from Tampa on Monday to playing that following Sunday. So it really was a whirlwind. You know, just getting logistics settled, you know, it's not easy, you know, getting hotels for family members, getting tickets, you know, making sure that everything is straight outside of the game. And, you know, before you know it, the game's there. And we won, and it was an unbelievable moment, but it didn't really sink in until a little later. Of course, we had, like, the Super Bowl party back at the hotel after, but hell, guys, we had like a 9 a.m. flight the next morning coming all the way back across the country. So all I remember is we did a lot of packing and a lot of flying.
Oh, God. Of course, it could be worse. You could be trying to do that today and with how the airline industry is now. So, yeah, whirlwind for you. How was the rest of that evening? How was the party? You know, just how about let's go like this. What was 2 in the morning like for Sean King after the Super Bowl win?
Well, it was a sense of accomplishment for me because I didn't actually play. Like,
yeah.
The only passes I threw were in pregame. But me being the brilliant mind that I am, I was like, you know what, how do I make sure that they don't ever forget me? So I wore white sleeves under my jersey, and John Gruden likes the camera, and the camera likes John Gruden. So I said, you know what, if you stand next to Gruden the entire game,
really?
You'll be in every picture. I invented photobombing. Find a picture of John Gruden at Super Bowl with Sean King not behind him.
Oh, now I want to go to Google Images, but I'll have to do that later. That is so smart. Good for you, Sean. Scale of 1 to 10, how much do you disagree with this statement? I would have been fine if, even though they lost and he had the fumble, I thought Jalen Hurts was the best player on the field yesterday. I would have been okay if he got the MVP, even though the Eagles lost 38-35. Scale of 1 to 10, how much do you disagree with that?
With 10 being completely 10.
10, yes, 10 would be completely, okay.
Jalen Hurts played a phenomenal football game. Patrick Mahomes was the best player on the field, especially in the second half. He only had one incompletion. They were down 10. He brought his team back, and they won by 3 comfortably. Like, he balled out. What happened in the first half was the Chiefs were very undisciplined on defense. Spagnuolo had a good plan, but they had some errors. Frank Clark jumps offside on 3rd down. Nada jumps offside on 4th down. They had a couple perfect blitzes. The contained got uncontained Hurts. So Hurts played really good, but they dominated time possession in the first half. I think it was like 22 minutes to 8. But then in the second half, the things changed, and the Chiefs' discipline picked up. They held the Eagles to only 11 points in the second half, and it was the Chiefs, led by Patrick Mahomes, that made the plays when they really had to be played. But hats off to Jalen Hurts. He definitely established himself as the future quarterback for the Eagles. Remember, coming into this season, there were still question marks surrounding Jalen. So hats off to him. Phenomenal game by the young man. But Patrick Mahomes was the guy that held up the trophy afterwards.
A year ago, we were wondering about Hurts after that bad playoff loss to Tampa. Now, I think the argument is Hurts could be, if not the best quarterback in the entire NFC. On the other side of things, were you shocked how irrelevant, invisible, the Eagles' defense and defensive line was yesterday?
I wasn't, because I was a guy that said all week, or the last 2 weeks, the Chiefs are by far the best offense this Eagles' defense has faced. You know, Philly handled their business. They didn't go up against a murderer's row of quarterbacks. They played Aaron Rodgers once, who I think is at the bottom of the top 10, but they put up 33 against him. Dak Prescott threw for 300-plus yards, and the rest of those quarterbacks, man, weren't very good. Whereas the Chiefs played Justin Herbert twice, Joe Burrow twice, Josh Allen, Trevor Lawrence twice. Like, I just thought they were more battle-tested and ready. And what you saw was an Eagles team that had feasted on bad offenses and bad quarterbacks kind of get exposed a little bit by an elite offense.
At the half. And, and trust me, it's the reason why I took Kansas City as well, just because I didn't fully trust I didn't trust the level of competition of level of quarterbacks and offenses that Philly faced all year. I also didn't expect Philly to score 31 points. The other was the defensive touchdown, to run the ball as well, and no sacks, no holding penalties against the Chiefs offensive line, which we knew was good. But to me, they performed even better than I expected. Near the end of the first half, and again joined by Sean King from VSIN, that's VSIN.com is where you go to find him. The Eagles were up by 10, and Patrick Mahomes was hopping like it was the AFC Championship game. He looked injured. We wondered about the ankle. At the half, I was worried that this game could have been a blowout. What was going through your mind?
Well, this is why everybody listening right now should tune in to VSIN Primetime from 3 to 6 Pacific, because at halftime of the game, me and Tim Murray did a halftime show on VSiN, and I said, bet Chiefs money line right now. Down 10, I knew the Chiefs were the side. I said, you know, when you have an ankle sprain like Patrick had, a lot of it's mental. And when somebody falls on it, all it does is breaks up that scar tissue, and you feel better afterwards. After that immediate shock of getting hit, I was like, he's going to be fine in the second half. And listen, Spagnuolo's going to tighten up the lack of discipline on defense, and they're going to win this game. I just felt like they were the better team still. So you could have got, I think it was plus 320.
330.
Money line.
It was. Yeah, I saw 330 on FanDuel. Yeah, they were plus 330. Yeah. I felt bad for everyone who bet the Eagles at minus 460.
Yeah, so that was my advice. So, I mean, if you want good advice, you want to cash some tickets, you also want to know why you shouldn't believe in your Maple Leafs, just tune in to VSiN. And Punctured Diamonds is going to give you all the best hockey advice. And last night, you would have got Chiefs money line in half at a great price.
That would have been, it was damn good. It was funny. And you wouldn't even have known that Mahomes was injured in that second half if you just watched the second half of the game. So where do you now, like, I'm never the prisoner of moment guy. I'm not here to put Andy Reid as a top five coach or Mahomes as a top five quarterback. They're on that road. I think KC is a dynasty with a lowercase d, not an uppercase d. But just from a historic point of view, how do you view the coach, the team, and the quarterback?
Well, they're elite. They're elite. I don't rank current players. I don't feel like a player can have a stranglehold on where his legacy is until his career is complete. Because after year five, we were saying the same things about Aaron Rodgers. And I don't think anybody views Aaron Rodgers as an all-time great quarterback. So, like, you got to let the whole thing play out. Having said that, I mean, he's off to a heck of a start, right? 5 years, 5 AFC championship games, I think 5 division titles, 3 Super Bowl appearances, 2 Super Bowl wins, 2 NFL MVPs, 2 Super Bowl MVPs. I mean, you don't get off to a better start than Mahomes has. And when you look at him, he's the real deal from a talent standpoint. Andy Reid, one of the best ever, because he's done it with multiple quarterbacks. He's been extremely successful with quarterbacks of different skill sets. So you got to, you know, the one constant is him. I mean, look at Belichick without Brady. I mean, so what Andy Reid has done is pretty legit. They're building a dynasty. The only thing I think that will impede Mahomes is the fact that it's a murderer's row in the AFC every year.
Yeah.
I mean, right, if you're going to have to beat Burrow with a healthy O-line, remember since he lost 3 of their starting 5 O-linemen, you know, so they didn't go into Arrowhead this year, you know, fully loaded. You got Josh Allen, who you got to think is going to rebound. I mean, Justin Herbert's now got Kellen Moore, you know, calling the plays, so I think it's a really good OC. Lamar Jackson is probably going to be on that side. You know, Russell Wilson, I think, is going to reemerge with Sean Payton. So that's the only impediment, is that it's hard coming out of the AFC to get to the Super Bowl.
Follow the man at Real Sean King. Check out his show at VSIN Primetime at VSIN.com. Sean, thank you so much. And next time on, we'll talk Samsonov, Murray, the return of Austin Matthews, and can the Leafs find a way to beat the teams that are at the bottom of the standings? I look forward to that. And where's Aaron Rodgers going to go? And all just the fun of the offseason. Appreciate all your contributions throughout the NFL season.
Can't wait, and go get your Lightning futures now. Lightning are winning their third Stanley Cup in the last 4 years. Bank
it. Love it. Actually, I hate it, but I love the confidence in it. That is Sean King, former Super Bowl champ with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. On the other side, we will do Sound of the Day. We'll do that after traffic, and traffic is brought to you by JanPro, Canada's leader in commercial cleaning and disinfection services. Trust the professionals at JanPro. Visit them today at janpro.ca. Time now for traffic. Raptors Orlando is actually a really good game because Orlando is one of those teams that, listen, they're bad this year, 23-34. But between Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner, they got talent. There is talent. Markel Fultz has been a nice story as well. There is talent on this Orlando Magic team. It's also a reminder, the Raptors, even though he's been up and down, but a lot more up than down, Scotty Barnes, the better pick than Jalen Suggs. But Orlando's that team that may scare y'all in a year or two from now. We didn't really talk about the Raptors because they were just the Super Bowl. There was so much to get into. Leafs, tough weekend for them. But the Raptors, an embarrassing loss on Friday, losing 122-116 to Utah. Raptors were up 109-96 after a Siakam jumper with under 6 minutes to go. Utah went on a 26-7 run. So you can wonder, was that the Raptors' offense or defense? Which one's more to blame? The problem is you could go either way. Raptors committed a lot of penalties, a lot of fouls. Not penalties, a lot of fouls early on in that fourth quarter. Utah went to the line 13 times in that fourth. Fred VanVleet, disaster on Friday. They airballed a three-pointer with 6 seconds left. But then on Sunday, redemption. VanVleet, 35 points, 8 assists, 12 of 26. And now the ninth time this season he's had 30 points or more. That is a career best as the Raptors held on to beat Detroit 119-118. Score that's a little closer than what it would indicate. Toronto was the better team. Scotty Barnes, 20 points on just 6 shots. Doesn't get much more efficient than that. Let's get back to the Super Bowl, but we will start with the Super Bowl coverage to end the show with Sound of the Day.
Sound of the Day, Sound of the Day, here comes the Sound of the Day.
And Sound of the Day, we go back to NBC Sports Philadelphia. This is live TV. Everything you'll hear when it was originally said live on NBC Philadelphia, none of the bleeps that you're going to hear were there. This was just a bit of a meltdown, and here is NBC Sports Philadelphia's Michael Barkham.
And then they get to a 3rd and 8 on the 15-yard line, and an incomplete pass, and Carl Sheffert's team with a call. I mean, utter complete is unbelievable. It's inexcusable. You don't make a call right then and there. You don't let the game be decided by the officiating.
And the best part about that clip, beyond the fact he decided, swearing once on live TV is not enough. Let me go a second time, was one of his co-hosts sitting next to him. I started to bug out. He's like, oh, really? Oh, can we swear on TV? All right, here we go. So that was one of the more amusing parts. And again, I started the show by saying this. That was a great Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes was incredible. He was heroic in that second half. Jalen Hurts, I thought, was the best player on the field throughout the game. But do not focus on that call. Was it a great call? No. Was it ticky-tack? Yes. Weak sauce? Yes. Was it correct by the letter of the law? Yeah. I mean, even, again, Bradbury himself came out and said, I held. The fact that the offender said, admitted, yes, this was my, you know, that was a call on me, should lower the decibel level. What bothers us the most about the call was location, 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 when it was called. At that point of the game, critical. Game is tied at 35. That call took away the chances of an incredible ending. It was a classic game that was anticlimactic because after that call, it was just kneel down, kneel down, kneel down, very short field goal, and Kansas City is the Super Bowl champ. If I was you, I would focus first on all things Patrick Mahomes. Second, the Kansas City offensive line and the scheming that neutered this supposedly, and it is a very good, great defense by Philly. I would focus on Jalen Hurts. I would focus on the fact that you had all these different players for Kansas City, scoring touchdowns who were new to the team. The guy who led everyone in rushing is a 7th round pick, a rookie, Isaiah Pacheco. Kadarius Toney off the scrap heap, touchdown, Super Bowl record punt return. Second round rookie receiver Sky Moore, who didn't do much this year, but he scored a touchdown. Juju Smith-Schuster, 7 catches, 53 yards, and some big ones in the second half. These are the things that I would focus on the game and not on the official, because let's face it, I know we love doing it. I know we love to harp on the officials. We all do. It's something that can unite us all as sports fans. But you're not going to get as much joy out of that, and especially a 38-35 game where the number one seeds did battle, where it felt like it could have been a blowout, and then the heroism of Patrick Mahomes in the second half. And you had the best quarterback in the AFC taking on the best quarterback in the NFC. That was a great Super Bowl. I don't think it was the greatest Super Bowl of all time, because for me, the greatest Super Bowl of all time has to have at least a little more defense in it than what we saw. I need a little bit of that. I'd go, you know, I might go when Denver beat Green Bay, when John Elway got his first Super Bowl, beat Brett Favre, when that Packers team was a behemoth with Reggie White on it. I think I'd go with that one higher. Maybe during one of the slow days we can rank the greatest Super Bowls. I ain't going to put that at number one, but that was damn entertaining throughout. And I think like a lot of you, I'm still bloated and full from yesterday.
Well, you also had the early morning, so
that's okay.
Six hours of Maddie on your radio waves today.
Today was the day to do it. Like I was like, I wanted to. I'm always excited after the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
and I mean, I didn't get much sleep. I got home and
after
still,
driving everyone home,
after
like
driving,
a good
yes, after driving a couple people home, got home a little after 11.
Did you make any money like an Uber driver? Or?
No. I did make money on my bets, but
doesn't count.
No, it doesn't at all. But I still couldn't sleep. I still was out of like, okay, I got to make some notes and things like that. And, you know, there's a lot that I wanted to get into. By the way, we got a little over a minute to go here. I see the producer for Overdrive is there. One of my former producers, Arad. Arad, I don't know if you caught it, but on the morning show today, I did Super Bowl trivia against Aaron Karolnik. There was ended up being 10 questions. Do you know what the final score was?
I would say 8-2.
9-1.
I knew it, buddy.
Yes, you would be the only one that would be able to do battle that would have given me a real run for the money.
If the sponsors are listening to this, yeah. The best trivia contest on the station will always be me versus Matt Cause.
Yes.
So one day, please, sponsors, let's have a 1 hour trivia off between Cause and Rod.
But it's
I'm
also
right here.
Yeah. Not listen, if it's Super Bowl and NFL history, the problem is, and we got to go, is that we would alienate the audience when we're talking about Jim Plunkett, you know, and then we're talking about Marcus Allen and John Riggins and Franco Harris.
Oh! I'm in. Can we play this game?
Who's first receiver to win the MVP?
First Super Bowl MVP or yeah. Regular season MVP?
Super Bowl. You got 10 seconds and Overdrive's coming up.
Oh,
Lynn Swan, when in doubt, go with the Pittsburgh Steelers. That'll do it for me. Overdrive is coming up next. Have a great day, everyone. I'll catch you tomorrow. You have been listening to Gameplay right here on TSN 1050. And the show, as always, brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more. Get your winnings fast when you download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today.